QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330, offset of 600, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, are there any announcements for our net? Please call KF6Q. All righty, topics for the evening. We're going to kind of go over VHF antennas. Again, as we will be picking up some of those tech workshops this spring. We've got some really nice weather up here right now, and hopefully it'll hold out. But I think we still got a little more winter before we see all of the springtime weather coming for permanent. So anyway, Mike, are you out there? WB6CLZ?
Hey, Tom, good evening. Yeah, this is WB6CLZ, stuck down in here at Placentia, ready to rock and roll.
Hey, Mike, glad to have you with us out there. Let's see if there's anybody else out there this evening. Anybody else like to check in to Tech Tuesday? Please come back to KF6Q.
AJ6BCK.
AJ6BCK. Adam, I believe, in Garden Grove. Thanks for being out there. Anybody else?
Good morning, everybody. KJ6FIL.
There's the guy with his clock set at Moscow time. Good morning there, Mike, in Redlands, KJ6FIL. Anybody else out there?
KJ6KDK and KJ6KDL. And by the way, the recording studio is fully functional.
Well, fantastic. I don't even want to know what that all costs, but we know you're going to use that for something else. So glad you got it all charged up, ready to go. Jim and Rosemary, glad to have you out there. Anybody else out there want to come back right now to KF6Q?
Zebra Jockey.
AF6ZJ out there in Rosemont. How you doing there, guy? Appreciate you being out there. Hopefully everything's going well. Oops, that's a little bit of a pun there, sorry. Anybody else out there, please come back.
KD6QCT.
KC6QCT, probably got that wrong. Please come back.
Kilo Delta 6, Quebec Charlie Tango, KD6QCT. And I'm mobile down in San Bernardino. Normally, New Stern Valley, but San Bernardino right now.
All right, roger that. Glad to have you with us on Tech Tuesday. Anybody else out there listening in?
Delta 6, Papa Lima.
AF6, Papa Lima. Harold, glad to have you out there. Anybody else?
AD, Alpha Delta.
Sorry about that. Okay. Alpha Delta. Sorry. Anybody else out there, please come back.
Tom Perry was on Echo Link, so you might want to let him come in.
All right, Harry, KE6RJ, hope I'm not stepping on you right now. Are you out there on Echo Link? Please come back.
Good evening, this is KD6RJ, KD6QI, control, and a big congratulations to, latest upgrade, that's Mike, WD6CLZ. Congratulations, Mike, to upgrading to Extra with flying colors.
All All right, roger that, Harry. Yeah, glad to hear you out there. And Nancy, KE6RJNQI, appreciate that. And, yeah, Mike, by golly, you got bragging rights, pal. You're up to an extra class now. Had a couple new hams also, will be tech class, and one guy went from tech to general this last Saturday, and in 2 weeks we're going to do it again. All righty, anybody else out there, please come back.
KD5PD.
KD5PD, I believe. Glad to have you out there. Anybody else? All right, Mike. Well, I think we got quite a few people listening in this evening. And as we usually do our little sunspot activity DX report from you, Mike, you want to go ahead and fill us in what has or has not been happening out there in the HF bands. WB6CLZ, now acting extra. Please come back. KF6Q.
Okay, Tom, yeah, I'm acting all right. KF6Q, WB6CLZ. Hey, thanks, Harry. And thank you, Tom. Nothing really going on. I've been studying up till the last few days, but nothing really good. There hasn't been any great stuff going on HF. We've only got 36 sunspots. A few days back, we had 0, 11, 13, not many. So things aren't really that good going on right now. And according to predictions, they expect low activity for the next day or so. We did, though, on the lower bands, on 40 meters this afternoon, about 4:30, we tuned in and heard I2IVN Roberto in Italy, which was kind of exciting. And I'd heard him and talked to him before. I really didn't try to work him because I don't have the best antenna systems for HF here. But he was coming in pretty good. A lot of people dogging him, a lot of people on frequency trying to get a hold of him. So he was working him right and left. Other than that, you know, things have been kind of slow, and, you know, hopefully things will get better soon. The sun has got a lot of activity on the far side, maybe coming around, so we'll just have to wait and see. Okay, back to you, Tom. KF6Q, WB6CLZ on Tech Tuesday.
Okay, roger that. And, of course, all our wishes go out to Art Langer. That's W6AWL, who's had a little mishap there, little heart problem there, and hopefully get out of the hospital here pretty quick. And, well, hopefully you see him up here in the mountain after a little bit. I know he wasn't going to come up here anyway until it got warmer, so... All our best wishes from Tech Tuesday out there to you and your family there, Art. Anyway, all righty. Well, Mike, thought we'd kick around a little bit as starting off this new year, new season, VHF, UHF stuff, and we do talk about a lot of HF stuff, too. I know this is we're on a VHF repeater here. A lot of people out there just with tech class licenses. Mike, what would be... Just real quick there, what would be a good reason to expand? I mean, with a tech license, you can hit a repeater, you can have linked repeaters, and you can do a lot of good stuff. What would be one good reason to upgrade to an HF general class license where you get on the HF bands?
Well, I can think of a couple of good reasons. One being, you know, if a prolonged period of power outage, I think we've got solar backups up there on the hill, but some repeaters, you know, power would go down. You don't have the repeater. Then you're limited to line of sight in the valley, you know, probably just the valley unless you climb up on a mountain. And there's also DX. Talking to people all around the world on HF with... little bit of power, not a heck of a lot, not expensive equipment, and that's kind of a thrill, talking to people around the world with the power to light a car tail light bulb. How's that sound, Tom?
Well, it is a lot of fun, and that's a good thing there, but you know, this is one of our things out there, as we take the repeaters for take them for granted. Okay, we don't take advantage of them. We just take them for granted. Anyway, But, you know, losing power is just one thing. What if there's an earthquake? What if the batteries fall off the wall? What if the batteries fall on the repeater? What if the repeater falls down? What if the antenna breaks? What if the winds break the antenna? The list is very long of things that could happen and take it out. And if that's so, we all have backup batteries ourselves, usually. We have simplex frequencies. But we're not going to get as far. If we had a rather large disaster in Southern California, which we know at some point we're going to have a very large earthquake, that's a definite. It's not a maybe. It's a definite. So when we do, getting out of this area, phones are going to be just totally useless. And HF is what? What's the advantage there, Mike?
Okay, well, the advantage, for instance, I use loop antennas very low to the ground. And on HF frequencies, that particular configuration of that antenna lets me get out really well in a 1,000-mile circle. You know, I get out further, obviously, but a 1,000-mile circle, I can usually work during the daytime, you know, anywhere in California, anywhere, Utah, you know, and that sort of stuff. So we can get out, we can pass traffic, we can handle emergency situations just about anywhere we want to go in the United States, depending on which frequency we use.
Roger that, and sorry if I didn't leave enough space there. We'll in the next time around. The 160 band, which is probably the lowest frequency and probably the hardest to get set up for because of the length of the wire. However, there's loading coils. That solves the problem if you had to have something in an emergency. But with the 80-meter band, what do we have? Like 80, 40, 60? If you want to do... actually, code, I think you have 30, 20, 17, 15, 12, 10, quite a few bands, all with different conditions, all with different propagation conditions, and I would say out of all of those, chances are probably even between 20, 40, and 80, maybe in 15, chances are we could talk to somebody outside of the danger zone. That's my thoughts. Back to you, Mike.
I think that's a pretty good thought. There's got to be, unless conditions are just awful, unless we've got a solar disturbance or something causing problems, you know, you can pretty well get out and get information passed somewhere else out of the zone of destruction.
Roger that. And just about all of our amateur radio-based volunteer services use a lot of HF gear as backup for that. The 2-meter is really handy. It's great for local stuff, and if it's functional, it's definitely very good to get out there and see what's going on, and that's why we have all our nets out there. But so anyway, if anybody out there who's been kind of following Tech Tuesday over the last getting close to a year now, Mike, and we talk a lot about HF stuff, even though this is a VHF repeater, and a lot of you guys out there are tech licensed, really encourage you to go further. Get that general license, study up a little bit. So we are doing testing now in the valley up here, and that's it'll be posted on the ARRL site. So it's an all go there. It's a good backup. It's a good thing to have, so... Anyway, Mike, anything to add? And then we'll move ahead with a little talk about some of the VHF antennas and some of the HF antennas, just some general notes for tonight.
You know how I always preach that, technician class licenses now have the use of the 10-meter band. Equipment, even converted CB radios, sideband type CB radios, will work on 10 meters. And, you know, not all the time, but we're coming up on a sunspot maximum here in hopefully a few years. Not all the time, but there are times when 10 meters is really cool. You can get that HF thrill on that and work all over the world with 5 watts. You know, if you want to get a taste of it, maybe that's the way to go, and maybe that'll incite you to upgrading to a general class license.
Roger that. And that is not a very wide section, but it is a section there on the 10-meter band. And I think 10 meters has been known to be open a few times here recently. So that's good. And like I say, that's probably one of the primary advantages if anybody out there has ever used CB radio. I did a million years ago. Biggest problem I had is I couldn't talk very far. And, of course, that's using legal equipment. And when I did, it just seemed like the noise was almost as big as my signal. And my signal went not very far. You know, it goes out there a little ways. You might get a little distance out there. But, yeah, with the move up from that to ham radio is a giant step. And the next giant step from technician class is to really to reach the world. So, anyway, Mike, I know we've been looking a little over here. Let's retrogress a little bit. Made a couple of VHF antennas at your workshop. Want to just review those real quick, and then we'll move on.
Now, Roger that. Well, I can think of three that come to mind. We made a little twin lead antenna, which is a portable antenna to give you a little bit more gain than your rubber ducky or, you know, a simple antenna. Basically, a piece of TV lead in, a coax, a ferrite bead or a loop of coax for, you know, to keep the IRF from feeding back like a simple ballon. And, you know, make one of those up in a half an hour and you're good to go. The next one, we made JPO out of some copper pipe and a little bit more. Very, very nice, simple antenna, but very good base station antenna. And then we made a little quad out of some fiberglass, basically fiberglass kite pole material, a little bit of wire, some PVC pipe, and a little coax, and it gave us a pretty good gain figure over all of the antennas and directivity, too. So we can point it, and you can focus in on a signal.
Okay, Roger that. And I think that twin lead you're talking about, that's also a J-pole. The good part about it, you can coil it up as long as you can get that thing to uncoil. You can fit it in your pocket. Very good portable, put it in your glove box. I think that was the feature we stressed at the workshop. Let's say if you're broke down on the roadside and your little rubber duck's not making it, and you don't have a mobile unit, if you did have just this one item, I think, what did that thing cost? Maybe the most expensive thing was the connector to screw on to the radio. So I think for under $10, very good backup portable antenna if you got stranded out there. So that was pretty neat. And I think you put those together pretty quick there. What, in about maybe 15, 20 minutes right there in the workshop?
WB6CLZ Tech Tuesday. 15, 20 minutes, something like that. You know, I don't have the most spry hands anymore, and, you know, just soldered them up and put them together. And yeah, they go together pretty easy. Anybody with a soldering iron, some strippers, and the parts from mostly Radio Shack can put one of those turkeys together.
Hey, Roger that. And J-poles, I think a lot of people have seen the J-poles. We had a lot of people out there there when we made some, and they're kind of fun to build, and a little adjustment there, a little playing around with the thing, but even if you didn't perfect it and tune it in perfect, still worked great. So that's the main thing. Don't have to have expensive equipment to tune this stuff in, and generally follow instructions off the internet or whatever, and it'll work. It'll actually work pretty good. You'd be surprised. So anyway, KF6Q here with Tech Tuesday Group on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. So anyway, neat stuff there, VHF, little homemade stuff. Now, for the HF bands, and of course you can buy all this stuff, but on the HF bands, what's that consist of? Length of wire, pretty much?
Yeah, Roger, go down to Home. I mean, if you want to get a little fancy, go down to Home Depot, buy a roll. You can even buy 100-foot, 50-foot rolls of wire. At least by the National Electric Code, you have to have at least number 14. Simple calculations, center insulator, make a ballon, very simple to make, and you're ready to rock and roll on HF. You can cut it for different bands. There are different configurations. The G5RV, the Carolina Windham, I mean, and a ZS6BKW, which is one of my favorite antennas, and you're ready to go, and very, very little outlay of cash.
Okay, Roger that. Without all the fancy names there, because unless the people out there have actually know what that means, they're totally confused. Essentially, you can take a piece of wire, cut the thing 120 feet, split it in the middle, hook coax to it, put it up in the air. There's your antenna, and it'll work. It won't be the best, and we've gone into how to perfect those and make them right. But there's an 80 meter antenna, which will also work on quite a few of the other bands, some of them better than others, but pretty much that's it. And I think, what, $30-$40 buys you enough to build about, what, almost four or five of these things, Mike?
The last roll of number 14 stranded, insulated number 14 stranded, was $45 for a 500-foot roll. Your average 75-meter dipole is right around 100 feet, give or take a few feet.
120 feet. I just said that. Unless you're working on one of the shortened versions, which only work because of a tuned section of feed-in line, and that's a whole other chapter, which we'll delve into later on, another night. But basically, a basic dipole is half wave splitting in the middle, best to be fed from that. And a couple little neat things would be better than just hooking coax to it. But it can be done, and that's the simplest of all. So 120 feet is perfect for about middle of the band, of the 75-meter band, 80-meter band, and you're good to go. So 120 feet, so you get four of them out of a 5-foot roll. Not bad. $10, and you now have an HF antenna. So $10, you can get yourself a little VHF antenna. Another $10, you can get just $10 seems to be that magic number, and you build about anything.
Roger that. Yeah, we add some feed line to it here and there, but that's a basic price. Then get out your crossbow, shoot it up in one of your trees, and you're ready to go.
Roger that. Well, you don't even need that. I helped KE6RJ. We put up a 20-meter. So take that 80-meter and divide it by four. A little bit shorter. And didn't have to use a crossbow, got a ladder, put a little pole up on the side of his house. So I got a two-story house, by the way, up here. And put that up in the air. I think he's probably, I don't know, maybe 25, 26 feet high. And just draped it as a V, inverted V, down to his fence. And we got that thing to match up so sweet. Had to add a little bit, had to do a little adjustment in the length. And a little adjustment in the angle. That angle helps to have that right, too. So, and when I left him the other day, he had on 14, let's see, was that, yeah, was that, no, yeah, yeah, it was 20 meter, 14.18. He had a 1.2:1. Pretty decent.
See, you don't even need an antenna tuner to deal with that. So, yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
Actually, we had his, but, you know, that's why we perfected it. And it would have worked the first time we put it up. We just, you know us. Hey, if it's, we like to mess around with it until it's right in there. So, but anyway, I guess as we're going to work on to all these different antenna systems this year, one thing I'd like to mention, and a lot of people out there feel that, well, if it's homemade, it can't be that great. It's going to be better if I buy it. I'm spending the money, you know, and it's going to be worth what I pay for it. Well, that's not necessarily so. People out there are making a product that's a good product, and I'm not going to name any names of who they are. They're all good products, but they are optimized to make them a profit and have a product at work. Us as ham radio operators, we're looking for one thing. We're only going to pay for the material. We're going to, our own time is free, and we're going to get out there and put this stuff up. And this is why we have these antenna workshops, to show people, hey, you know what? It's not that hard, and you're going to build something that's better than what you're going to buy out there in the store. Anyway, Mike, I would say that there was nothing out there special that we did at the workshops as far as material-wise. A couple things were easier to purchase online, but essentially we didn't get all the way through some of the things we were going to do, but we'll pick those up this year and then go into some other multi-elements. Anyway, so let's just, now that we've kind of scattered everything all over the place out there, what would you say is probably the most, the next step up from that J-pole? The Yagi, the Beam, or Yagi Yuta? You want to give us a little background on it? What is that?
Tom, I was talking. I think we doubled. I hope not, but I think we did. Yeah, well, from the Beam, Yagi Yuta, you know, that's been around since 1920-something. Basically, the fancy name for it is an end-fire multi-element array. Basically, it's two pieces of aluminum, or, you know, whatever you can get that, and together. One is called the driven element, and the other is a parasitic element, is what we call it. And it's either a reflector or a director, depending on whether it's front or behind the driven element. And that kind of antenna gives you a little bit of gain for VHF, very simple to make, and gets you some directivity and gain.
All right. So the Yagi, after Dr. Yagi, and then there was a Dr. Yuta. A little history here. Dr. Yagi actually worked everything out to use two elements in two different ways. Either one was a director actually aiming it, and we call the driven element. That's the one we put the power to. Or it had one behind it acting as a reflector, and his main goal was to get a little directionality, which you get quite a bit just in that alone. And the second step was to get a little more gain in that direction. And that worked too. And then I think Dr. Yuta says, "Hey, a little bit is good. Let's add more." So he's the one that said, "Let's put 3, 4, 5, 17 zillion more out in front of it." And there we have the Yagi Yuta, which actually was recognized only as a beam for the longest time. And they're not just for VHF and UHF. We see them a lot too with the HF antennas. We have a lot of people up here using them. Correct?
AF6Q, WB6CLZ on Tech Tuesday. Oh, yeah, three-element, tri-element beams have been popular for many, many, many years. Yagi beams, I've got a short mini beam here that I use down in Placentia. Works pretty well. It's a version, a loaded version of a beam, three elements. And, yeah, they've been around for a long time. Standard of the industry for many years.
Roger that, and this is a good example. I have one that I purchased, I think, actually from you. You got it from a yard sale, and somebody originally bought it in a store. The point is that some of the elements are no more than eighth-inch aluminum rod, which bend, but they're economical to build. I guess a better step would be to have them out of aluminum tubing. But you have to understand that when you're making something for a profit, and which most businesses do, they're looking to get something out there that will work. It's good, but they're going to cut costs where they can. So as hams, we don't have to worry too much about that, because we're going to buy the raw material. Gives us a lot more leeway, and like you say, we can even meet the NEC code. 14 gauge, are you sure? Are we running a light at the end of this thing, or what's going on with that?
I don't see the basis behind that, but I know that on wire antennas it has to be at least 14 gauge. You know, and I'm not really sure about Yagi's, but I do know that way back when, years ago, my neighbor and I in Anaheim, the first Super Bowl, well, we made a Yagi antenna so we could watch TV in San Diego out of just coat hangers and a broomstick, and believe it or not, that worked pretty well.
I remember those days, by golly. I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, that was because they would close it to the normal broadcast nearby. The blacked out areas, as they called them. Well, anyway, as we've kind of thrown a lot out there, let's call for some comments out there. We got a lot of listeners out there, and we're far from the end of this, but any comments out there, questions, please come back to either Mike or myself. It's KF6Q here on Tech Tuesday. Go ahead.
Okay, KD6LAN here for ID. Is it possible to use just a flat piece of metal without any wires coming off of it, let's say, to use that as a probably a directional antenna?
You know, I would say just a flat plate of metal by itself. It's got a couple, I'm not going to say it can't be. Normally, we're dealing with wires and pipes and things like that because we're actually driving a current through them. Believe it or not, as we see a J-pole or even this driven element on a Yagi, we're feeding this thing in the middle, and we have current going from the middle out. And that, with a plate, the current's gonna, you know, there's a couple different things here. Plates are used a lot for reflectors. Actually, as the driven element itself, I'm not gonna say it can't be actually flat, like, I'm gonna say like bar stock, a piece that's flat, a little wider in one dimension, and then instead of like a flattened piece of wire, actually works better as a larger bandwidth. But a flat plate by itself has applications, but not as well as some of the other things. KD6LAN, KF6Q, anything else?
Comment.
Harold, AD6PL, go ahead.
Yeah, what he's talking about sounds a great deal like a skeleton antenna. I just read a little bit on it, and I've heard a little bit about it, but that would work, I think, on the same principle that the undercover cop cars use. A lot of times you can't see an antenna anywhere, and the actual antenna itself is the crack between the trunk lid and the car body. That's their antenna. That's the way I understand a skeleton antenna works, AD6PL.
Okay, you know, here's another thing. We're going to call this a gap or a slot antenna. Essentially, and this is the way that electromagnetic waves propagate, you can either have a wire or pipe or whatever as your antenna element, or you can have, like you're saying there, plate steel with a slot cut in it. I guess this would be in the case of the car. The slot actually is the radiating. It's the lack of metal becomes the radiator instead of the metal. Very, very strange. And I'm gonna tell you right now that it's way up there in the theory part. However, slot antennas are used on HF work. We actually had one, not this last year, the year prior, used out there at field day. So it has, you know, there's a lot of different ways to get something to radiate. So, yeah, that's possible. I think that's what they're using there, Harold, something like that, on that principle. Any other comments? Please come back.
Got a comment?
Go ahead.
Yeah, the Isotron antenna is a stamped type antenna. I have a friend of mine that has one, and it's really a weird looking antenna. And it's a stamped metal.
Yeah, I can imagine, and especially as we get into the higher frequencies, I'm not sure what frequency you're talking about there, but and we're talking a lot of our Oh my gosh, everything that's wireless anymore is like 2.4 gigs, and some of the cell or house phones, cordless, are 5-6 gigs, way up there. When in these higher frequencies, there is a whole lot of open doors there on what can be used for antennas, so it gets confusing. So we're going to try this year to stick with some of the normal types, but love to talk about this stuff because, hey, it's neat. It's interesting. It's stuff out there, so appreciate that. Any other comments?
Yeah, comment again.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the Isotron antenna is an HF antenna. And you can get them for some of the, like 20, 40, I don't know what all bands it'll cover, but you can get some different configurations or combo configurations. But it is really a weird-looking antenna, really weird. So that's all I have for you guys.
And, you know, I think a lot of this is because of the processing power we have now. I mean, for crying out loud, I think most people have a cell phone with a calculator that has more processing power than the computers that put us on the moon. with all this processing power, some of the formulas and stuff, and this is where they've actually perfected or optimized, I should say, the Yagi Uda for different things, more gain, more directivity, more reliability, things like that. And it's opened other doors, too, saying, well, if we had to calculate this out by hand, we'd never get done. And now, in a matter of a few seconds or less, it's there. So I'm sure that has a lot to do with some of the newer stuff out there, as a guess. But, yeah, it's like I say, we'll probably see it in the next couple of years here coming up in the Radio Amateurs Handbook. Any other comments?
I got a quick comment.
Yeah, KF6Q here, Tech Tuesday Group. Yeah, go ahead.
KF6Q, Tech Tuesday Group, WB6CLZ. I was talking to a gentleman, oh gosh, a couple days ago on 20 meters. He was up in Washington. He was licensed first in 1946, so he's an old guy. And he was telling me how he used to load up his CW transmitter on his bed springs. His parents would not let him put out an antenna outside, so he would work CW, and he said he actually worked quite a few contacts using his bed springs for the antenna. I don't know if I would want to be in the same room with the RF exposure, but that was his story, and he was sticking to it.
And at night when he went to bed, it was already warmed up. He just cranked up the power. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you know, I think I've heard that more than once of different things like that. Anyway, so, great comments. Appreciate that. Any other comments out there while we're kind of out there on the wild side?
I'm going to hear it for you, Tom. 86 feet.
Go ahead, Harold.
I used to, when it was still a good functioning magazine, I took World Radio, and the fellow that uses the pseudonym of Kurt N. Stover claimed that he had loaded up a grocery cart on HF and talk to foreign countries. So I guess apparently if you know what you're doing, you can hook anything up and pretty much talk on it. AD6PO.
And, you know, I think Mike and I have both said that, you know, that's pretty much true. You can almost load, if you can get it to tune up, and that's the basis of how well your tuner will match something up. A wet noodle you could probably transmit on. But, you know, that's where we try to optimize some of this stuff and get a better matchup, you know, and get out there better. But, yeah, this is something to think about, too, especially if we're looking at disaster times or something that happens. And you go outside, oh, well, there's my HF antenna on the ground. But I know a guy, and if he's still listening in, had a Carolina Windham up here last winter when we had about 4 or 5 feet of snow, And when he got up here, half the antenna was almost laying on the snow, still loaded that thing up, still got out, and we call it the Carolina Snowdom. And Harry, I don't know if you're out there, but I think that was the greatest thing in the world. The KF6Q here with the Tech Tuesday group. Anybody else out there with anything wild like that? Well, I'm waiting for AF6ZJ out there to tell me how he used his well casing in the ground to load that up, but I don't think he's going to come back on that. Well, anyway, Mike, yeah, it's pretty awesome, and this is why it's a lot of fun to build stuff, and I think this is, of anything, to express that, you know, a lot of people don't want to build anything. They're afraid of failure. They're afraid, oh, you know what, I'm going to build this thing. It's not going to work. It'll work. It'll work, and we'll help you make it so it works the best. That's the main thing. But it'll work. You got to just have some fun, get out there, and get the piece of scrap wire you got laying around. You'd be surprised what it'll work. So, anyway, well, Mike, what do you think about the bed spring? Let's see, what else is there out there? What else could we load up?
I've heard of people loading up their rain gutters. You caught me off guard, but man, I've heard of just about everything. The old expression is this thing will tune up a wet noodle. So yeah, if you have a good antenna tuner, it may not radiate well, but you can tune up on it. The transmitter will like it, and you'll get out. You'll work some contacts with just about anything.
You know, here I thought I was being unique. I built back in the 60s, I built a Yagi. Well, back then we didn't know what Yagis were, so we just called them beams. And back then I didn't have my license, but we did have a active CB license. So I built out of EMT, electrical metallic tubing, thin wall, half inch, made a three element, it might have been four, beam, and it worked. Unfortunately, I should have used heavier wall because the first big windstorm, you know what happened. But anyway, but it did work. And just used some directions and loaded that thing up. Talked to my buddy down there, of course, all legal on CB, down in Bear City. But anyway, a lot of fun. A lot of fun building stuff. I guess I've always loved to do that. Anything else out there? Anybody else with any experiences or wild things out there with antennas?
LUB.
Yeah, go ahead.
Good evening, everyone. 6, Lima Uniform Bravo, pedestrian, full kind of breathing heavy, walking fast. Just listening to you guys. Anybody had experience loading up the chicken wire in a house behind the stucco? I live in association. I'm trying to do something. So, anybody heard of anything like that?
Well, I can comment a little bit about that, unless somebody else has anything. Well, I'm not too sure about the stucco wire, but I have used a chain link fence as a booster reflector for my little HT. And so I know that works. So I bet you if you had something in front of that chicken wire, it'd make an excellent ground. Not the best in the world, but it would work because I know chain link fences work for me as a reflector to my back. I've also used huge water tanks for a city. I've parked in front of them and used those as a reflector to get me over a mountaintop on VHF. Yeah, you know, there's a way. I don't know if you could load it up directly, but you could definitely use it as a reflector and something was in front of it. Thanks for listening in, though.
Oh, got that. Yeah, I live in one of those darn DC cars. Can't have anything exterior, so I may have some wire on the roof or something. I just got my here in December of last year, upgraded in January. So looking forward to all this HF stuff. KJ6LUB, pedestrian mobile.
ZJ.
What you can do, if it's your own house, or if it's not, it's not going to damage anything, you can put bridges, jumpers on the edges where the flashing comes together to make sure you have a good solid electrical contact and use the flashing. You have to get the ARRL antenna book to find out exactly how to load it up. All you have to do is paint over your little jumpers. All it takes is some metal screws and some bell wire or a little bit heavier copper wire to jump it. And I've read about loading up the storm drain or the water drains around your house. If you can't get to the flashing, you can just use the your drain system, 86PL.
Okay, well, thanks, Harold. Appreciate that. And I think we had ZJ up there. Go ahead.
Let's see. Something about well casings? Not just kidding. I was listening. Anyways, I saw somebody something on someone's QRZ site where they literally took some radio-related site anyways, where they somebody took and dug up their whole backyard, and they underlaid the whole area with chicken wire. I don't know if it was to be used as a counterpoise or as an a radial affair or something like that, but when he said chicken wire, it struck a chord with me. And I remember seeing somebody actually doing that, actually literally laying down chicken wire, overlaying it with an inch or two of soil.
KF6Q here with the Tech Tuesday group. Yeah, I think as a counterpoise or grounding type element, I've heard of that done where if you have a lot of extra wire or anything, putting it in the ground helps a lot. Anybody else out there, please come back.
Question?
Go ahead.
This is W6EOE. I was listening to all the different antennas from the 40s and all. I didn't hear the beer can vertical mentioned. Has that been mentioned? Go ahead.
The beer can vertical, no. Go ahead. haven't heard about that one.
Okay. My older brother, he was EOH, and he was living there in West Covina. I went over one day, and he says, "I have a beer bunk." And I says, "Oh, okay." And we walked out in the backyard, and here he had all these beer cans. He had been drinking some beer, and he was soldering them end to end to make a vertical. So I was wondering if it ever worked. He's signed a key now, W6EOE bunk.
Oh, sorry to hear that he's silent key. But, yeah, you know what? Anything metallic like that and any modifications thereof. So I'm sure that was probably a pretty good antenna. So thanks for bringing that up. Anybody else out there, anything different or weird or questions, comments? This is going, Mike, what have we started here?
CJ again.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think we discussed before also somebody actually taking people, taking tree trunks, things of that nature, and actually being able to make them resonant.
You know, there's enough moisture in that, and that's actually why my HF antenna is not doing well. It's the high current point is touching the tree. A lot of people don't realize that. That's actually the bad part about trees. You want to make sure that's high current point where it feeds into that dipole, don't let it touch the tree like mine. Oh, I can still talk to Mike down there in Placentia, but not very well. So, I'm thinking anything metallic. The SWANT antenna is real popular in, we get up into the microwave bands, and a lot of this stuff is really pretty cool, especially in the VHF bands and up. 6 meter stuff's a little big, but start getting the 2 meter and all the frequencies up, we have everything's smaller. So we got a lot of room to play with stuff and not worry about a lot of material. If it's not working right, we can fix it. It doesn't cost a lot of money. So, Mike, how long would you think a 6 meter J pole would be?
Golly, let's see. What is a 6 meter? 50 inches, something like that. No, I'm not sure. I'm not really sure, Tom. I'd have to look at that. I've never seen a 6-meter J-pole, but boy, that's a good one. Hey, I've got a confirmation on that beer can antenna real quick. You know, a guy in Greensboro, North Carolina, put 47 beer cans together. Boy, I bet they had one heck of a party. Back in 1956, and he was loading the thing up on all bands from 3.5, from 80 meters to 20 meters with better results than his Carolina Wyndham. And, you know, I'll look up that 6-meter J-pole.
Well, you don't have to look it up. This is one thing that's pretty cool about antennas is they're all what we call scalable. So let's say whatever we have on our 2-meter J-pole, and this is not exact math, but the 2-meter J-pole, well, the 6-meter is times 3. So essentially it's going to be 3 times bigger. And I think we were about almost 5 feet with the long element. And so, yes, that would be about close to 15 feet. Three meters, maybe not quite 15. Oh, wait a minute, no, that would be a half meter, right, and a quarter. Yes, it would be. So it's a very, very big J-pole. And you can buy them, actually, online, amazing enough, but I think they break down to ship. So anyway, anybody else out there, anything wild and crazy, which is, I think, where we've ended up, and we'll get to some more organized. We'll focus on specific antennas as we work through this year, and some little tips and hints of what makes them work better, good stuff to make them out of, and good ways to build them out of standard, we'll call it hardware store supplies. So any other comments out there?
SKN.
SKN, also sometimes SHK, but go ahead, Chris.
I love this. Beer can antennas. I like the broomstick there, too, Mike, the broomstick Yagi. Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, before I upgraded to general class, I already had the radio, and I had no idea to do what, you know, for an antenna and this and that, and I said, well, heck, I can only, receive anyway. So I actually hooked up to my wood-burning stove and the pipe, of course, which goes up out of the ceiling. And it actually received pretty darn good. Now, I don't think the SWR would have been quite right for transmitting, but I just thought I'd share that with all the other ideas out there. KI6SKN.
Oh, Chris, no. Hey, we got to hook up the meter. We'll get the meter down there. Mike, hey, CLZ, next time you're up, we got to get the meters, go down to Chris's house. We got to see if we can load it up and which band it loads up the best. If it can receive, I know that puppy will transmit. And who knows, may help you start the fire in the below it.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, great. Yeah, I can just see him be up there now adding and subtracting lengths of the exhaust tube, you could call it, to get the right length, yeah, to tune it up.
Sounds like a hot mic to me.
That would definitely, hey, Kelly, how you doing out there? Yeah, that would definitely be something you have to be careful with. It would definitely be hot in more ways than one. So excellent, good deal. Anybody else out there, any wild and crazy things you've experienced out there with antennas?
Comment.
Go ahead, comment.
KJ6KDL. This is kind of, this happened mostly up in the higher frequencies, using a Pringles can on 2.4 gigahertz for Wi-Fi to make a very directional antenna. I'm sure you could use larger tubes and paint cans and things to get into the lower frequency range. That would be a fun, crazy project.
Yeah, you know, Jim, I've seen that or heard it mentioned on the Internet reading through. Now, is that because the Pringles can has got, like, what kind of a foil? It's cardboard, but it's got kind of a foil wrapping around it?
Absolutely, and it just so happens to be the right diameter and length, the full-size can, to be tuned for 2.4 gigahertz.
Now, and also, and this is crazy, I think this is also true. Didn't they make those, like, illegal if you're using them for that purpose to, oh, and wait a minute, that's only if you're trying to steal Wi-Fi, I think. I'm not sure. Usually if something works like that automatically, it's illegal.
Anything for nefarious purposes is illegal. But the first time I saw that, somebody hooked that up to a Bluetooth receiver and was able to pick a phone at 1.2 miles, almost 7,000 feet.
Well, that's amazing. And, Jim, you know where I'm at. Chris, you know where I'm at. Up here, of course, my radio room is up on the second floor. And I have a window to the west. And right sitting in front of my window is my little Wi-Fi router that we use here. And never thought about it. You know, there's nobody up here. I mean, you know my neighbors. I do not have neighbors. I have neighbors that run around on four legs. But anyway, I had a neighbor all the way, two streets over, which is, we got about 200 feet between the streets. The streets are 40 feet. I have no idea. It's 400 feet, 500 feet. And on a basic Linksys Wi-Fi, he came over one day. He says, I want to know if this is your Wi-Fi because it all of a sudden just stopped. I had moved it out of the window and just moved it to the shifting furniture around. So it's amazing. There was nothing extra added, just it by itself. And he was using simply standard equipment. So you got to be careful when you're out there with your Wi-Fi stuff, I guess. Just anyway, KM6Q here with the Tech Tees Tuesday group. Any other comments? All right there. Well, anyway, we're getting close to the 8 o'clock hour, and I know there is a rescue net on another frequency here. A lot of people that are on our net here like to listen in on that, so we're going to close this. We try to close this down by 8 o'clock. Anyway, got a couple of test sessions coming up. Please get in touch with me. I am the liaison up here in the Big Bear Valley. And if you want to get anybody with a new license or if you want to upgrade or whatever, maybe in the near future we could even get some classes going for general class, maybe even extra class, but at least for general class. So, alrighty. Well, last call. Any comments? And back to Mike first, WB6CLZ.
Oh, no real comments. Wild and crazy session. Beer cans, bed springs, and all the other. And gosh, I have never heard of loading up on a wood stove. That's kind of cool. And we are going to have to take pictures of that one, Tom. Yeah, take pictures and readings. And, you know, Cindy would love to document all that. Okay, yeah. Well, great session. And I guess that's all we got going. Back to you, Tom. It's WB6CLZ.
Okay, Mike, that's almost as crazy as operating a field day station out of a loader bucket. And if there was anybody up here with the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club field day this last year, that's probably the most awesome thing. And it's on our website, so it's great pictures of that. But anyway, any other comments? We'll stick around for a little bit, but any other comments, suggestions, or just general questions out there, please come back.
D6PL,
Harold, go ahead.
You get pictures of that wood stove transmitting, you probably get them in QST with a little little text to go along with it. Hey, D6PL.
I think so. Hey, Chris, we'll make you famous. Yeah, well, you always want to be rich and famous. Well, we can probably get to take care of half of it anyway, so. Good deal there. I appreciate that. Any other questions or comments out there, please come back. All righty. Well, I think we're going to call it a wrap. I want to thank everybody out there who's participated or listened in. And we do this every Tuesday, weather permitting. We keep it pretty clear if we've got some very ominous weather conditions up here, and that is once in a while, but not too often. I think we've only missed two in the last, since March, I believe. Appreciate everybody participating, and tell your friends, tell them to listen up. And any other ideas or topics, please give us an email, either myself at KF6Q, that's Kilo Foxtrot 6 Quebec, at ARRL.net, or Michael over there at WB6CLZ. That's Mike Whiskey Bravo 6, let's see, Charlie Lima Zebra, Zulu, sorry. Anyway, at ARRL.net. And we'll bring it up and do some research on for you. So QST, QST, QST. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Going to return the repeater back to normal use, whatever that would be. And hope everybody can tune in again next Tuesday for Tech Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater, 1900 hours. This is KF6Q. We'll be clear, but always standing by.